Welcome to another episode of Million Dollar Stories, where we get to interview authors from all over the world. You know, I love talking to authors because they have the courage to take their thoughts, put it down on a piece of paper, and share it with the many, ultimately changing their legacy and destiny and potentially the world. And the book that we're talking about today is perfect for you out there if you're looking to maybe get into the service-based businesses, all right? And I'm a service-based business, and there's probably a lot I can learn on this call, so stay tuned for that. But if you're looking to write a book out there, you know, the books out there have changed my life, and now I write books to help change other people's lives. If you need help, check out dreamstarterspublishing.com, and if you have a book you want to convert it into leads, check out bookmarketingcrm.com. The book that we're referencing today has about 155 reviews on Amazon, which means it is resonating with the world, and it is called The Boutique, How to Start, Scale, and Sell a Professional Services, How to Start, Scale, and Sell a Professional Service Firm. And we have the author today, Greg Alexander. Thanks so much for being here, sir.
Thanks, Mike. It's great. I'm glad to be here.
Well, let's start off with the genesis of this book. What made you want to sit down and write it? And maybe give us a little rundown on how you actually came to be the go-to expert in this industry.
COVID.
I hear that answer a lot.
Yeah, that's what happened. So my story, I'll be brief, but I started, scaled, and sold a professional services firm, the subtitle of the book I did myself, from 2006 to 2017. I sold that firm in the fall of 17 and thought I was done. And my beautiful wife, Brooke, and I went and traveled all over the world in 18 and 19. Then, of course, COVID hit and everything got messed up. I got tired of eating DoorDash all day and watching Netflix and et cetera, et cetera. And I started getting calls from people that were in my network that say, hey, Greg, how the heck did you do that? I'd like to do that. And my firm was a consulting firm. So when I say professional services, think about consulting firms, marketing agencies, IT services shops, anybody who markets, sells, and delivers expertise for a living on some version of the billable hour is kind of our core tribe. So I was getting calls from those people saying, hey, I'd like to do what you did. I didn't want to go back into the consulting business, not because I didn't like it. I loved it. It made me a wealthy man. I'm grateful for it. It's just I had spent 11 years of my life doing it. It was time to do something else. So I figured the most scalable thing I could do was leverage the oldest technology in the world, which was the book. So I sat down with lots of time and just pounded it out, put it out there, not knowing what the heck would happen with it. But it took off and did really well. And that led to the formation of our community called Collective 54.
Got it. Yeah, I saw that. Collective 54. That's what it is. As soon as I saw that, I was thinking of Studio 54. So I don't know if there's any type of connection, but
I wish it was that fun.
the ultimate club of all time. So it says, what is a boutique? I think whenever I saw this, I was like, what is a boutique? That was really my first question. You answer that in the summary of the book, but a professional service firm past the startup stage, but pre-scale, right? Something that maybe services a good number, but you're not servicing the masses. Examples can be found in consulting, marketing, advertising. Like you said, it's basically anyone who sells their expertise, which I would say is 60, 70% of people who listen to this podcast. I think that's a fair assessment. And there are 1,465,900 boutiques. Don't know where you got that number, but that is fascinating. So this book is for owners of professional services, and it's about really scaling. So I think a lot of people think that if they have a service-based business, maybe they can't serve the masses and produce a high level of quality and customer service. So is that a fair assessment that many people believe that, but it's absolutely a falsehood?
Yeah, that was once true. Services, businesses in general. So think of like accounting agencies and law firms, et cetera. It was perceived that they couldn't scale because every time you brought in a new client, you had to add new heads. And there was only so many new heads you could hire at any given time. So it wasn't scalable. That was before the world of technology took over. And these days, most services companies are tech enabled, either in total or in part. And that has enabled them to scale dramatically. Scale defined as the rate of revenue growth grows faster than the rate of headcount growth. And that creates operating leverage or margin expansion in your business. That was the first big thing. And then the second big thing that happened is the world got flattened because we're all now connected, which means I can tap a global talent base as opposed to just a domestic talent base. And there's brilliant, capable people all over the world who are willing to do the work that we sell here in the US for a fraction of what we might need to be paid for it, yet still be very profitable for them given where they live in the world. So those two big things, tech enablement and access to the global talent workforce, has really changed the services industry forever.
Hmm. And so when I'm looking at your book here, I guess this is section three, but when I'm looking at it is, I guess, let's start off with engagement, I guess. Maybe this does have to do with culture, but I know that I was able to really increase my business based off of becoming very clear on my message on who I was there to serve. Case in point, I started saying to people out of the gate, if you want to write a book, I can help you out. Anybody in the world, I can help you out. It didn't resonate with a lot of people. But when I started saying, if you have a business and you want to write a book, I'm your go-to guy. It seemed like the more I dialed in my message, the more I was able to increase that engagement. Therefore, I was able to maybe open up my pipeline with the right individuals and therefore attract the right tribe and then give them enough work so they can actually make a living here. So is that where it all starts, getting very dialed in with the target audience, the avatar?
I think it's one step just before that where it all begins. And that is understanding the problem that you solve. There's a lot of businesses out there that get trapped in the lifestyle business. They never really become a substantial business. And that's because they're running around with a solution looking for a problem. And we need to flip that dynamic. So if we understand what the problem is, we can get into the painkiller business instead of selling vitamins. And once we understand that, because when you're in pain, you're buying.
Mm-hmm.
You're all going to buy the painkiller. Vitamins, maybe. You know, maybe I have a New Year's resolution. I'm going to get in shape and I buy some vitamins at GNC for 2 or 3 months and then I don't do it ever again. But if I'm in surgery and I'm in pain, I'm going to take that painkiller. So that's the difference. So you want to find a problem that's urgent, pervasive, and people are willing to pay to solve it. Then once you locate that problem, then you do exactly what you did, Mike, which is, okay, who is having this problem? And what gets produced from that is an ideal client profile, which is a demographic and a psychographic profile of the person that you're going after. And when you can hone in on those two things, now all of a sudden you become surgical with your marketing and your sales efforts, and you start having very high close rates and short sales cycles at very attractive price points. And that's what really leads to the scalability factor.
So in your subtitle, like you said, it's how to start, scale, and sell a professional services firm. So I think a lot of people don't even think that they can sell their service firm, right? So maybe that's one of the things that I had to learn as I was kind of coming of age. And I realized you can, if you do it the right way, as long as it's not built around you, it's built around a system, built around a process. So is that another key aspect that you, once you build this, make sure it's built in a way where it's not you and only you?
Yeah. So I'm very proud of the following stat. So at Collective 54, we've been around for about 4.5 years. We've helped 36 boutique services firms reach exit. And when I say exit, these are life-changing wealth creation events. So they're able to sell their firms. And one of the reasons why they're able to do that is exactly what you just said. The firm is more than just a practice. A practice is a business that's built around an individual. And once that individual goes away, there is no firm. So there's two things you need to do to move from building a practice to building a firm. So number one is you need to create intellectual capital. So in other words, your clients are paying you for things in addition to your time. So it might be a methodology, a tool, a process of some kind. And then secondly, as the founder, you need to build an executive leadership team. So the business isn't dependent on you as the founder, as the creator to run it. The firm can run without you. And until those two things are accomplished, and there's others, but those are the two big ones, no one's going to be willing to buy your firm. So in my example, I said I sold my firm in 2017, and I sold it for $162 million. Now, I share that with you not to brag, although I often get accused of bragging when I share that number. But I share that number with the audience to inspire them to say, listen, there's nothing special about me. If I was able to create $162 million in personal wealth for myself, you can do it as well. And the way you do that is you build a firm, not a practice, because you have intellectual capital. You're selling more than just time. You're not a body shop. And the firm no longer needs you to be in it. There's a team in place that can run it without you. And when you have those two things, you're creating enterprise value in creating personal wealth, as opposed to just an income stream, a paycheck.
Can you explain a little bit more about that intellectual capital? I love that phrase. I've heard it before. I've never used it myself. So can you explain that?
Yeah. So let's think about what you do for a living in Million Dollar Book, right? So you help experts take their expertise, turn it into a product, a book, market it, generate leads. You probably have a system around that.
Correct.
That's intellectual capital. That's what people are paying you for. That's why they're coming to you. That's of value, as opposed to just you selling them an hour of your time.
Got it.
The difference.
Very much like a lawyer who says, I'm $250 an hour and I can help you with wherever you're at in doing X, Y, and Z, but it's $250 an hour. Therefore, it's very difficult to sell that. And what you're saying is that if I have a cycle that you go from step one to step eight, and we're able to provide this, you're going to be, it becomes this, it becomes a true asset. I guess that's probably the best way to put it.
Yeah. Correct. I mean, you can sell the hour at $250, but guess what? There's only so many hours. So because of that, there's 24 hours in a day. And no matter how productive you are as an attorney, you have a cap on your scalability because you can't manufacture the 25th, 26th, 27th hour. Whereas if you're not selling the hour, if you're selling intellectual capital instead, it's unlimited. You have no cap on your scalability. Hmm. And that's the breakthrough that your listeners need to make in their mind to get to scalability. That's the big thing. That's why the book is Start, Scale, and Sell a Professional Services Firm.
One thing that I learned was always start with the exit strategy. Even if you're not going to sell it, always start there because you're going to build it in a way where you could sell it. And when you do it that way, you do put together the SOPs, the key performance indicators. You start tracking your numbers. Therefore, you start to build it in a way you become an owner rather than a worker. And I think that was great advice because even if I never want to, let's just say I want to hand it off to somebody in the future, or maybe I just want to keep it forever. I know that I'm building the business in an aspect of what professionals would view as something that they would buy. And so did you ever come to that realization that you were building it the wrong way? And then you started to right your ship and then eventually said, you know what? I will sell this and I will take a number that is X amount of dollars or more.
Here's the reality of it. No one can run their firm from the graveyard. We all die. So it's not a question of if you're going to sell your firm, it's when, for how much, and to who. That's a fact. There's no way around it. So unless you have found the fountain of youth and you can live forever, you're going to sell your firm. So now the question is, how do you optimize for the best possible exit? And starting with the end in mind to, you know, steal from the great Covey family, you know, that's the way to do it is to think through that. And every decision that you make is either a step towards or a step away from a successful exit. Now, to answer your question directly, you know, did I realize that in the beginning? The answer is no, if I'm being honest. In the book, I lay out a framework. It's called the boutique framework, and it's based on a life cycle. And the life cycle from launch to exit, in my opinion, is 15 years. It's broken into three stages, grow, scale, and exit. And each stage takes approximately 5 years. And the way you run your firm in each one of those stages is very different. And the reason why it takes 15 years, unfortunately, because some might say that's a long time, is because in those first five years of growth, you make a ton of mistakes. This is one of them, not realizing that you're going to sell your firm along the way. But there's all kinds of other mistakes. For example, you mentioned not knowing who your ideal client is. You've got to be in the market for a period of time and stub your toe over and over again before you learn these things. So there's a period of experimentation, of thrashing, that you got to make it through. And then once you make it through that, you can hit that scalability. Once you hit that scalability, you can reach that exit.
Mm. Yeah, maybe that's it. There's no way to speed up the process. Very much like when you're cooking, you can't speed it up. You got to let it simmer for a while and you transform. And that's the price you pay is that time of stubbing your toe and learning the people you like to work with, who you want to work with. And most likely that does come, you know, after you make a lot of mistakes. So when you help people, is there some people who just, they're just not ready to listen to you yet because they haven't been in the game long enough? Or can you help them do it right from the beginning, the right way, no matter what their experience is?
What we've learned is peer learning is the best way to deliver help. Peers learning from peers, experience is the best teacher. So Collective 54 is a community. And what that is meant to say is that when you join our community, you're learning from your peers. It's very different than a consulting organization or a training firm or a university or college. You're not joining to go, you know, sit at the altar of some, you know, supernatural being who's got all the answers. I don't have all the answers. What I have is I have 300 members that have come together in this community that are all brilliant at a few things, and they also have their own weaknesses. And then through Collective 54, we do intelligent pattern matching, and we set up relationships, mentors, and proteges. So for example, Mike, you might be really great at something that I'm struggling with. And if I can have access to you, you can say, hey, Greg, don't do this, don't do that. Let me help you avoid all of these dumb taxes. I've already been on that journey, and here's what works. That's incredibly valuable to me because it saves me a ton of time. And then the reciprocation, this is part of what it means to be in a community. There might be things that you need help on that I just happen to have already figured out. And when we can put those people together, that's where the magic happens. That's where the scalable learning takes place. So that's how we answer that question, which is, can we help people? Yes, we can, but that's how we do it.
So give people a little rundown on your journey. It seems like you have had two careers by looking at your bio. It seems like you've had two careers, maybe all in the same field, but the entrepreneur mentality, you just love it. It seems like it's in me. I think I got it whenever I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. So have you always had this want to have your own business, or just to build something from nothing, or maybe something happened in your life? Like, we've interviewed many, many, many entrepreneurs, and usually they hit some type of ground zero moment in their life and they create the new identity. And that usually entails starting a business. So, anything that you could share with us to kind of really encapsulates who you are and why you became an entrepreneur?
So I've had three chapters in my professional life, which at the time of this recording, 2024, is now 30 years. I can't believe it, but it's 30 years now. So chapter one was my time as an employee. So I graduated from the University of Massachusetts, and I got hired by a small tech company in Massachusetts called EMC. That was one of the luckiest breaks of my life because they were one of the dot-com era superstars. And that company grew super fast. And as a result, I rose through the ranks. And I got advanced positions as a very early and young man in my career. And that taught me a lot. So that was chapter one as an employee. However, there was a point in time where I hit the ceiling. I wasn't advancing beyond that. And the CEO of that company, a guy by the name of Joe Tucci, who I have a tremendous amount of respect for, said to me, Greg, you're never going to make it beyond this point because you're unelectable. I said, what does that mean, unelectable? And he said, when you work for a Fortune 500 company, it's like running for political office. And people have to elect you to represent them. And you break too much glass, you're probably better served to be an entrepreneur. And
it's the greatest compliment ever, right? Way to go, Joe. Way to go, Joe.
No. And at the time, I thought he was insulting me, but he was giving me great wisdom, and I am forever grateful for that. And he was right. So I started chapter two, which I launched my firm, SBI, and that was my time as an entrepreneur. And it was one of those moments in my life where the stars lined up. You know, what I was naturally born to be lined up very well with what was in the mission critical path to be an entrepreneur. For example, I have a very high risk tolerance. I want to move really quickly. I'm very comfortable with failure, et cetera, et cetera. So I took to it like a duck takes to a pond. I mean, it was just, I was perfectly suited for that. And then we went on this great journey as an entrepreneur, and I'm super passionate about entrepreneurship. And I believe that it's entrepreneurs that solve all the world's problems.
Damn right.
But that's taken me to chapter three, which is where I am now. And that as an owner. So I'm not an operator, I'm an owner. So I own Collective 54, but I have a team of operators that run it, and all the members are operators, and I have performed for them kind of a mentorship as opposed to running the business. And that's yet a new chapter in my life that's equally as fulfilling. And that's what the book, The Boutique, is all about, is imparting my wisdom on what I learned and what people might learn from my personal journey.
This book, I believe, came out in 2020. Do you know that right now, you probably don't know this, but do you know right now it's number one in at least one category and it's currently a bestseller?
No, I did not know that, but yeah. Thanks for letting me know.
Yeah. So if you check it out right now, you got the bestseller tag. Guys, check it out. That's fascinating. I don't think I've ever done that with somebody who posted or published a book, I guess, years prior. Yeah. So congratulations on becoming a best-selling author potentially again. Is that right? I mean, you probably already hit it, but anyways, so, you know, when people are out there and I think that, I get a lot of questions regarding starting a business and I get the question, should you really love the business? Should you be in love with everything about it? And my advice, and maybe I want to see where you stand. If you're going to do it, you need to love an aspect of it. You need to truly love an aspect. So when I started publishing books for entrepreneurs, I didn't really care about books, but I did care about business and I cared about true stories. So I loved helping people tell true stories. So I latched onto that and that became my passion. And therefore I was able to slay dragons and run through fire in regards to anything else in the business because I loved one aspect. I think passion has to be a part of it. What do you believe, especially in this industry?
I do think it's part of it for sure. However, I do think passion alone isn't enough. So, for example, my personal passion is entrepreneurship, as I just mentioned. The vehicle upon which I'm able to explore that passion is Collective 54. So I'm not passionate about that business, but I'm passionate about that being a vehicle to explore my passion, if that makes sense. So, for example, you know, I don't know if the great Steve Jobs was passionate about desktop computing, but he was right. He was passionate about putting a dent in the universe, which was his famous quote. And he happened to use the tools of his era to do that, which was technology. Or let's take the great Elon Musk. What is he passionate about? He's passionate about physics. So what is he doing to explore physics? He's launching satellites in the world and building electric cars. That's the vehicle that allows him to pursue his passion. So I think it's a very subtle distinction. Is you need to understand what you're passionate about, but the vehicle to explore that passion is a separate thing in and of itself.
Hmm. And so I'm looking at your website right now. Guys, check out his website, collective54.com. Very clean. And it looks like you offer many different things in regards to one-on-one coaching, group coaching, all of that. The number 54, very significant to you because you have Capital 54, Collective 54. What's the hidden meaning behind that?
So the number 54 is the industry code for professional services. The NAICS, North American Industry Classification System, assigns a number 54 to professional services. So it's in the name because we want to signal to everybody that we are a specialist. We specialize in a single industry.
Got it. And that brings up a very good point. I do believe that you need to pursue some type of mastery in one field. It's my philosophy. That's how you become welcomed into certain groups, get on stages, on podcasts, and you can leverage that mastery and that expertise in other fields. But you do need to specialize in one field to start out of the gate. So do you believe that? If anybody out there is listening to, you know, they're thinking about starting a business or they are growing a business, but they are sort of a universal figure. There's no one thing that they do and do very well. I think that hurts them eventually. So do you preach, hey, if you're going to start off on the right foot in the entrepreneur space, master a craft, and because mastery opens up doors across many spectrums. So is that your message?
Well said, Mike. I mean, the riches are in the niches for sure. So you want to dominate a niche. You want to define a niche so tightly that when somebody has a problem in that niche, they don't have a choice. They have to consider you. You might not be the only provider, but you're definitely not going to be invisible. You're one of the major players in your world. I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I hear a lot of people say that, oh, you just need to be very versatile and universal and you need to put your money in different vehicles. I don't know. I've noticed that every time I make an investment, if I would have put that money back into the business, I would have excelled my financial situation so much faster. So I think the more control you have over your business and you have one vehicle, and obviously you need to diversify to some degree, but being laser focused on the destination and being the go-to source top of mind just gives people a reason to check that box that you are the guy. I don't care. Obviously you pay it's a little bit more money to work with you, but at least my problem will be solved. And it seems like everybody else trusts you. So I trust you and you're able to get that result faster if you're the expert. It's good.
Yeah. I mean, so in the world that we're in, Collective 54, meaning we, it's called the community business. And there's some generic players in that business. Your members are probably familiar with Vistage or YPO or EO. These are wonderful community-based organizations, and they've been around for 100 years, and they're huge, but they're generic in nature. However, if you are one of three things, preferably all three of those things, and Collective 54 is the only spot for you. So first, you're in the professional services industry. Second, you're a boutique, so past startup, pre-scale. And third, you're the owner. And we specialize in those three things. And if those three things are important to you, and you go looking for a community that has those three things, we're the 800-pound gorilla in that tightly defined niche. However, if you go and look at community-based businesses, we keep track of this, there's 416 of them just in the United States right now. So how do you differentiate? You know, how do you stand out in a crowd of 416 firms? It's impossible. So you really got to niche down to what it is that you do. And it's really important that people know what you don't do as well as what you do, so that they opt out, which sometimes entrepreneurs don't want that to happen. But trust me, you don't want to spend 3, 6, 9, 12 months in a sales campaign with someone who's going to say no at the end eventually. You want them to tell you no. You want to lose quickly. And the people that stay in are the ones that resonate with your value proposition, because they're actually who you're going after, because again, you've niched down so tightly.
Man, it's great advice. So when you went to sell, did you do anything that might be of great value to our listeners or viewers? Like, I've heard people start to take their office and get out of their building, right? Get me away from the business completely, so I'm not hands-on. People weren't relying upon me. And the potential new buyer looks at me as somebody who's not involved at all in the day-to-day operations. So that's a great little nugget that if you're about to sell, number one, really take care of your financials. Don't try to save money on taxes every year, because people will look at you and say, oh, you didn't have a good year this year. Well, play the game with the long vision in mind and do the financials, but also get out of that business, have the standard operating procedures documented for any new hire, any new manager, and get the hell away from the building completely. Don't even have an office there. So what would you recommend?
So I recommend all of that, but this is a big subject, selling your business. There's a whole section in the book called Exit dedicated to this, and it's got 32 elements in it. So it would be impossible in a podcast to talk about all of them, but let me just share a couple. So when somebody's thinking about buying your business, they're looking for reasons not to buy it. So just understand that. When they do due diligence, they're trying to identify risk to prevent themselves from making a mistake. So what are some of those risks that you need to mitigate? Well, one you just mentioned, the business can't be dependent on the founder. So you got to build an executive team so that after you sell the business and you go away, there's actually a firm. Another big one, this is a huge one, especially for small firms, your audience, is too much client concentration risk. We define client concentration as your top five clients equal more than 30% of your revenue and your profits. Mm. That's the case. That's a real problem. There's a whole bunch of potential acquirers won't buy your business, because if one of those two clients goes away, the whole P&L falls apart. So you want a heavily diversified client base. That's a huge one. Another one when you're going to sell your business is you want to hire the right M&A advisor or an investment banker. Why is that? Well, you want to get as many people interested in buying your business as possible. You want there to be competition for your business, because that pushes up the price. And it gets you in a favorable position to dictate terms. Too often, entrepreneurs don't hire an M&A advisor or an investment bank. They try to sell their business on their own. And when you only have one buyer, you really don't have an exit, because that one buyer could go away. You need lots and lots of buyers. So those are some things that I would advise your audience members to consider before selling their business.
Nice. And so when you work with people, it could be at any stage, right? The beginning, the middle, or close to the end. I have a lot of clients that actually are mentors whenever they're ready to sell. So they just jump in to help put together the right plan, set up the right buyers, and make that process seamless. So you can help out in any stage?
There's really three personas that come to us at different stages. So there's the one that you just mentioned, someone who's ready to sell their business, and they've never been through that before. And the opportunity to be in a group of peers that have done that before is very helpful. So that's kind of one use case. The second use case is the scale use case. And that looks like this. So an owner has got a very successful business, but they're working 70 hours a week and it's not sustainable. And they got to figure out how to work smarter, not harder. I know that's cliche, but it's very, very true. And to be in a community of peers who have cracked that code is super helpful. So that's the second one. And the third one is the growth stage persona. So this is somebody who's new. They've launched their business. They are an entrepreneur and they're figuring things out for the first time. They're not yet worried about scaling. They're not yet worried about exiting. They're worried about making a go of it, you know, making payroll this month, surviving. And it's very comfortable because that can be a lonely place if you're there by yourself. It's very comfortable to be in a community of peers like that. Those are the three main areas, three types of people that we help.
Nice. So one question we ask all of our guests, outside of your own book, is there one that you recommend maybe that puts you on this path? Maybe there's a Rich Dad, Poor Dad book in your past that you recommend. Is there anything that stands out that is worth mentioning?
My favorite business book is a book called Think Fast and Slow. Mm. And it comes out of the field of behavioral finance. And it teaches the skill of decision-making. And I believe that that is the number one skill in life, definitely in the business life, and most profoundly in the entrepreneurial journey. In the end, we are the sum total of the choices that we make. So if we can become effective decision-makers, and that book explains how to do that, we're increasing the odds of success exponentially.
Think fast and slow.
Yeah.
Got to check that out. I might have heard somebody else recommend that. I got to put it on the list.
Changed my life. It's a fantastic book.
So, Greg, is there a social media channel that you are on? You're posting to quite a bit. Is there, in addition to the website, obviously, collective54.com is one that you can go to. Is there anything else that people can find you on that you're very active?
Well, anyone who's listening to this likes podcasts, so let's go there. So I have a podcast called the ProServe Podcast. You can find that on Apple and Spotify. Also, I'm very active on LinkedIn. That tends to be where our community hangs out the most. And you can find me on LinkedIn as well.
Yeah, that's where we found you. So he's easy to find. Just Google him. Obviously, the book, The Boutique, How to Start, Scale, and Sell a Professional Services Firm. It's currently number one on Amazon. So pick it up today, guys. And I like how he puts some of the stuff that I'm seeing just in the early stages of the book and really easy to read. And, I think that this will be beneficial for our audience. So Greg Alexander, I really appreciate you taking your time to be here today, man.
Thanks for having me, Mike. I appreciate it.
Remember guys, a $1 million book will lead to a $1 million life. Right on.